The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Shannon Farley, Executive Director of Fast Forward, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving, on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
The Silicon Valley story is familiar to most of us. A great idea, a visionary founder, accelerators and incubators, angel investors, and so on, and it even sometimes ends in fame and fortune. But what about tech nonprofits? What do they do? Where do they go for funding? Who provides a support system for them? Well, up to about 4 years ago, the answer would have been, who knows? But now it's an organization called Fast Forward. And it's a pleasure to have with us their executive director and co-founder, Shannon Farley. Good evening, Shannon, and welcome to The Business of Giving.
Thank you for having me.
Provide us with a snapshot of Fast Forward and the mission and objectives of the organization.
Fast Forward accelerates tech nonprofits. For us, tech nonprofits are organizations that build hardware or software at the core of their impact model. We want to make it easier to found, start, and scale these incredible organizations. So we run a number of products and programs that support the ecosystem of tech nonprofits.
Well, speaking of found, I love hearing founding stories, especially from one of the founders. Yeah. So tell us yours.
Our founding story is one of the kinds of stories you hear around Silicon Valley all the time. I previously ran an organization. It was called Spark. Mm-hmm. It was a global women's fund. And I noticed over the years how my work had really changed. Mobile phones had become ubiquitous. All of my grantees were using them, but nobody was building products for them. And certainly no one was investing in them to build the products they wanted. And I got really frustrated about that. And I thought about it over the years, but I was doing my work and happy. Mm-hmm. And then one day I went to a party. And at the party, I sat next to Kevin Barenblatt, who is my co-founder. Mm-hmm. And Kevin is a tech entrepreneur, and he had started a company that over several mergers became essentially an ad optimization company. And I like to joke that nobody ever dreams of being an ad optimizer.
No, you're not spending your life getting more clicks.
Exactly. So as we were sitting there, he was thinking about what he wanted to do next, and he was asking me, why aren't there more accelerators or incubators for tech nonprofits? Mm-hmm. Like, why aren't there more Wikipedias or Khan Academies? What would it take to get more of these organizations to scale? And my honest answer was, dude, don't get me started. There's a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And we just kept talking. And, in Silicon Valley's history, in 2005, there were no accelerators, incubators. LinkedIn wasn't really a thing yet. There mm-hmm. were no AngelList. It was very hard to start and scale a tech company. But then all of these products and organizations that supported the ecosystem of startups started to bubble up, like Y Combinator and Techstars, AngelList, others. And because of that, that's why there's a robust startup community in Silicon Valley today. That's what we want for tech nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe timing is everything, or at least almost everything. And it really does seem like this is just the time for an organization like Fast Forward to come into existence. What is happening to make it so?
There are big problems that we're facing every day. And our biggest social problems are really the exact kind of problems that deserve the best technology solutions. But tech nonprofits, it was so hard to start them years ago because you needed, like 10 years ago, you would have needed $5 million to start a very basic tech nonprofit. Now, because the cost of computing has gone down so much, we have teams that have started their organizations for $5,000 out of their student loans, right? You can start using cloud infrastructure, using free services, using mobile as the key delivery mechanism, you can reach customers that previously were untouched by tech innovation.
Shannon, how would you describe the nonprofit tech community today?
The tech nonprofit ecosystem is nascent but exciting. We see folks starting new tech nonprofits every day to address issues that were previously untouched by technology. So reporting police violence, making it safer for kids to connect online, looking for ways for dreamers to find scholarships, connecting veterans to suicide resources that they need from peer communities. These are issues that were that have been in our communities forever, but they haven't had the scale and potential that tech enables.
You know, you've been an observer of both the for-profit and nonprofit tech sector, and I would imagine there are advantages and disadvantages to each. What would some of those be?
It's so funny. You know, all of our founders are asked every day, well, why aren't you just a for-profit? And the truth is, it's hard to start companies. It's hard to start for-profits, and it's hard to start nonprofits. The advantages of being a nonprofit is that you get to focus 100% on impact. That's your North Star. Mm-hmm. So you are building for that customer. You're serving that customer. You're identifying their needs of that customer and doing everything you can to hustle up resources. For-profit companies will also say that they're there to serve their customer. But the truth is they're there to serve their investors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to focus on profit. So if that's what you're interested in, for-profit is the way to go. One of the other things we hear is that fundraising is so much easier in the for-profit space. And I think people who say that don't hang out with for-profit founders. early money is easier in the for-profit space. There are many investors. They're very visible. And they are jumping over each other to get into good deals.
Mm-hmm.
That is not true in the nonprofit space. So, but if you are able to figure out a business model in the nonprofit space, if you're able to attract early money and get sustainable income going forward, you can serve your customer at scale.
Mm-hmm. So nonprofit tech startups come to you. What are the things you're looking for? What are the factors you consider when deciding whether you're going to get behind one of them or not?
Yeah, we look first and foremost at the leader. Tech nonprofits are tough, right? It's everything that's tricky about a startup and everything that's tricky about a nonprofit at the same time.
Mm.
And so we're looking for somebody who has grit and gumption and real passion for the project. So for us, one of our first screens is experience with the problem. We want people who have lived it meaningfully so that they are deeply committed to solving the problem and often not as committed to the type of solution. It allows them to be a more flexible founder. We're also looking for folks who have tech chops. And, you know, in the nonprofit world, we're so used to the social entrepreneur model,
mm-hmm.
in which there's one charismatic leader and they're out in the world doing their thing. Well, with tech startups, there's often multiple leaders. So we look at teams, not just the one founder. And then we're looking for a good tech platform
mm-hmm.
that it can scale and have an outsized impact.
So if one of your criteria is looking for people who have experienced the problem,
yeah.
I would think probably the diversity among your founders is going to be greater than you would find in a for-profit tech startup. Would that be the case?
It's true. We have 31 alumni, and 84% of them are co-founded by a woman or person of color.
Mm-hmm.
And in our current cohort, we just had demo day this week. In our current cohort, 100% of the teams have a co-founder that is a woman or person of color.
So when a nonprofit tech organization becomes part of the Fast Forward family,
yeah.
and are in your portfolio, what kind of support do you provide them?
You know, we operate as seed investors. We
mm-hmm.
give philanthropic capital, but we do everything we can to position these organizations for success. So we give them $25,000
okay.
in general support money. We give them training. We give them access to over 100 leaders from the tech and philanthropic space. And then we give them a community of other founders that are launching tech nonprofits and getting them to scale. We do it. It's a true accelerator program. It happens over 3 months. And, you know, we are just completing one round now, as I mentioned, and teams have worked really hard. They've launched products while they're in the program. They've brokered their first deals while they're in the program. They've worked on their pitches and financial models and their impact models. They are really poised for success.
You know, creating a community, I think, sometimes is overlooked, but it really is important. I think you've referred to these folks as weirdos in that they have one foot in the nonprofit sector
sure.
and one foot in the tech sector, and you kind of bring them together and realize they're not alone. They're in there with some others.
Yeah, it's really special. You know, when we started, Kevin and I thought that teams would want money, mentorship, and each other. Like, those were the things
mm-hmm.
you would need. As previous founders, like, those were the things we craved, right, in our own companies. And so, but it turns out in every year this is true, it's the order is inversed. They want each other,
yeah.
right? Because these, being a founder is isolating often.
Oh, yeah.
It can be difficult. But when you have other people that get why you've chosen an impact model over a profit model, they get what it feels like to build something and have it maybe not work great the first time. They get what it means to iterate for impact. They have their community,
mm.
and it's really their tribe.
Yeah.
And we're here to protect it.
And you also said access to leadership, which I would, or leaders, and I would think that would mean mentors. Who are some of these mentors?
Yeah, we're really fortunate to work with a number of tech companies that are leaders in the field, from Google to BlackRock to Comcast, and we get their leaders to mentor our teams and do everything. You know, some days they're sitting one-on-one and we see them open up their code and get it together. Other times we see them working on partnerships deals together, coaching them through how to get a better rate. It's been an impressive community of folks that really care about technology and making great technology, and they want to see it applied in use cases that they never imagined.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to a few examples in your portfolio, but before we do, I want to ask you about the digital divide. Yeah. And I think that most of us understand the digital divide, referring to access to the internet, and there's some wonderful organizations like Education Superhighway that are addressing that. But you, Shannon, are concerned about what could be described as a second digital divide. What is that?
Yeah, I believe the second digital divide is about products. And this comes from my work as a global funder. So I'll tell you a story. At the time, it was like 2007, and we were doing what was considered like cutting-edge philanthropy. We were doing micro-grants to grassroots women's leaders. And one of the groups we invested in was a savings program. And we gave these women's cooperatives cash to save, and they basically put it in a lockbox, and a woman slept in a different home every night so no one stole the money from them. And they each put into the savings box, literal box, once a week. And it really, at the time, it was considered cutting edge. And as I was walking out of my meeting with these women, it was in Tanzania, I was walking out of the meeting with the women, and I noticed that they were all bartering for food and childcare on their phones. Through text, they were sort of doing the business of the day. And I was like, oh, Nelly, we have totally missed the boat. Like, why is this a lockbox? Mm-hmm. We could have just built something for them. And I think this is the point that, the tech world, it's very profit focused.
Mm-hmm.
And it's had to be for a long time because it was quite expensive to launch and scale these tech companies. Now that the cost of computing is so much less, you can serve a customer that has never been touched by technology. And what we need now is folks to invest in the kinds of founders who get those problems, that are willing to work on them, and that have really visions for how you can serve in the last mile.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've already seen it, because when we started Fast Forward, we knew of about 80 tech nonprofits, and now there's over 400, and it's only been 4 years.
Yeah.
People are building products that they couldn't build previously. And I think it's an exciting moment. And it's also a counter-narrative to the other things that are happening in tech.
Oh, for sure.
This is a weird moment in Silicon Valley. And
You have one of the few good narratives out there. When I think about tech, what do I think about? I think about the bro culture. I think about manipulating information.
Mm-hmm.
I think about privacy.
Yeah.
I think about all those bad stories that are going on. And you have to be one of the more positive stories coming out of Silicon Valley right now.
It makes me hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was interesting about this last cohort is we have 10 companies. We call them companies because they are in every way. 10 companies, and many of them are volunteer marketplaces. So these are all teams that started within the last couple of years in sort of this really toxic tech and political moment. And they started because they wanted to help, and they knew there were other people who wanted to help, and they believed that the technology was the way to get there. So it's really heartening to hang out with founders who see the world through that lens.
I bet it is. Well, let's talk about a few of those companies. Mm-hmm. When I was out in San Francisco a few months ago to do some corporate culture features, I stopped by a wonderful organization called One Degree. Mm-hmm. Tell us about them and what they do.
One Degree was founded by Ray Faustino, who is just an amazing human. Ray Faustino grew up in low-income, affordable housing in San Francisco. He is a first-generation immigrant, Filipino immigrant. And he used to spend all of his time looking up resources at the library for his family.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray goes on to do really well in school, and he's in grad school 10 years later. And he looks over and he sees a kid who looks just like them, who's looking up resources in a binder. At the same time, Ray had a phone in his pocket, and he could find 7 different kinds of macchiatos within 2 feet of him.
Right.
And he was like, this is nonsense. So he built what started out really as like a Yelp for social services in the Bay Area, and it has scaled and grown in really powerful ways. They have scaled beyond the Bay Area into Los Angeles. They're also serving not just search, but also ways to apply for affordable housing, ways to work and track users of social services for systems. It's a powerful tool for communities and for cities.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way to navigate that maze.
Yeah.
I mean, I sometimes look at it in my own life and you try to quit Sirius Radio and you can't do that or change phone carriers.
Right.
I can imagine trying to get all the pieces of the social service sector together and figure out where to go and what to do. This is an unbelievable tool.
Yeah.
You know, the work of a traditional nonprofit can be quite labor intensive.
Yes.
And to have an impact on a lot of people, it can take a lot of staff. But one organization that's been able to have that kind of impact with an incredibly small staff has been Career Village. What do they do?
Career Village makes it possible for any young person to ask a question about careers.
Mm.
You know, if you grow up in a community or a family in which there are no professionals, it's very hard to see what else you could do in the world. So the power of Career Village is that it connects professionals through LinkedIn, verifies them, and allows them to answer questions, also an up and down vote answers on the site. The proxy for it is Stack Overflow, which is a little techie.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what it's there for, to answer any questions kids have.
One of my favorites in your portfolio,
yeah,
and I suspect one of yours as well, although I know you're not allowed to have favorites, is CommonLit. And that's an organization that has scaled remarkably fast. What has this nonprofit tech organization been able to achieve?
Yeah, CommonLit is an amazing story, not just because of the scale, but the breadth of the vision. So Michelle Brown was a Teach for America teacher in rural Mississippi, and she had over 50 kids she was serving in nearly a dozen reading levels across the class. And it's just no way to serve that every day well and really get kids excited about reading. So she did what was the only resource available to her at the time. She went to Pinterest to find curricula, which is insane. And so she built the platform she wished she had, when it's a completely free, Common Core aligned reading curricula platform. When we met Michelle, she was still kind of working at her kitchen table. Mm. She had a very basic platform and dreams of building a more complicated technical product. And you know, it was she and her best friend sort of working it out. After the program, she was serving about 10,000 students at the time. After Fast Forward, she hit 1 million users faster than Facebook.
Mm.
So real viral growth. And today she's serving over 5 million.
Cool.
Yeah, it's incredible. She's also expanded beyond the U.S. into Mexico.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an incredible resource and teachers love it. This is something they desperately needed.
Yeah. Well, that's fast forward.
Yeah.
And one last one, and this is right out of the playbook of having experienced the problem you're seeking to solve. And that would be the story of Brandon Anderson, the founder of Raheem. What is that story?
Brandon was in love. He had a lifetime partner and they were traveling the world together, figuring it out. And when Brandon was serving in the military, his partner was in a routine traffic stop, shot and killed by a police officer.
Mm.
And it turns out that this police officer had had a number of incidences that resulted in shootings. And he had just sort of moved from police department to police department. And Brandon was deeply broken by this. But instead of he turned that pain into Raheem, which Raheem allows people to report their interactions with police, both positive or negative. In many places around the country, the sort of state of the art of customer service and police department is you have to go into a police station to make a written complaint or a written compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Raheem allows you to do that on your phone.
Oh, wow.
And then makes the dashboard public on the back end. It's powerful. They are, he just moved to the Bay Area. They're up in San Francisco working on Alameda County, and his growth has been really special. And one of the things that's, I think, magic about Fast Forward is we put folks together who wouldn't necessarily meet each other in other contexts. So a year ago, when Brandon was pitching at our demo day at Box, he met Jeff Kucera, who is the co-founder of Box. And this is a guy who wanted to do good in the world, but hadn't found his spot. So Q is what we call him. Q met Brandon, got so excited about the idea, and immediately joined the board and got a number of Boxers to contribute to Raheem's code.
Nice connecting.
Yeah.
Very good. Shannon, with the outsized impact that these nonprofit tech stars have had, Would you have any advice for traditional nonprofits who might want to get a little bit more into this space? You know how difficult it is to change the way an organization operates. What would you tell them?
Yeah, digital transformation is like a big topic in the what we call the brick and mortar nonprofit space. And there's a few things that all nonprofits need to do. One is that we have to stop thinking about technology as IT and start thinking about it as strategy. If you don't have a digital strategy today, you're leaving impact on the table. Now, many nonprofits may feel like they can't afford it, but I would say you can't afford not to do it. And there are small steps you can take to get there. So the second thing we recommend all nonprofits do is put together a tech advisory board. If you think about nonprofits in the 1990s, it wasn't commonplace to have finance professionals on your governing board. But now it's standard. You want people who understand budgets, who can do financial forecasting with you. That's what we want all nonprofits to have. You need technical people who are going to help you build out the kind of organization that can serve people for generations to come. And the third thing that I want folks to think about is partnering with tech nonprofits. We often hear brick and mortar nonprofits saying like, oh, I'm going to make a mobile app. Oh, I'm going to do this thing. Well, it's actually not easy. And you need the right people in the right places to do that. Mm-hmm. In the for-profit space, when Google really wants something, a product, they often just buy a company that's already doing it. They acquire that company rather than building it on their own. That's something I want to see more of in the nonprofit space. Acquisitions, partnerships, licensing deals. Because when you bring a tech nonprofit into a brick and mortar nonprofit, it will innovate the entire organization. And the goal of innovation is to serve more people.
Yep.
We're all in it together.
Mm-hmm. All sound advice.
Yep.
The Accelerate Good Global Summit has become a very significant event in the sector, usually held in the earlier part of the year. Mm-hmm. Tell us who comes and what do they walk away with?
Yeah, this is one of the experiments Kevin and I came up with a couple years ago. You know, in all sectors, there is a stake in the ground event where you bring together the leaders, the investors, the product companies, and just the enthusiasts who are excited about what you're doing. So we decided to try it 2 years ago, and lo and behold, you know, 150 people showed up, and folks were so excited. We had Mike Krieger, who's the co-founder of Instagram, talking about how he came to philanthropy and what he thinks about it now. We had Bill Draper, who's like the original venture capitalist and also the original venture philanthropist, talking about his strategy, sharing a stage with some of the most exciting tech nonprofits in the world. And it went so well, we did it again.
Yeah.
with hundreds of people and more programming and services for those tech for good enthusiasts. And we'll do it again in 2019.
Yeah. You know, I'd be interested in, Shannon, getting back to looking at tech and traditional.
Yeah.
Have you observed any differences in the workplace culture, the corporate culture of a nonprofit tech organization compared to the traditional thing we're used to in the nonprofit space?
Yeah, one of the things culture-wise that we work inside of a lot of tech companies. That's where we run our accelerator. And the value statement or the mission statement of the organization is always on the wall, right? Or it's written on the napkins or wherever. It's all over. And the difference, I think, with tech nonprofits is they really are mission-minded. It's not just words painted on a wall. And so the kinds of folks who do well in not tech nonprofit environments are laser focused on how you serve someone who was otherwise untouched, or how do you serve someone who markets have failed in every other way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the age range is all over the place. There's folks who this is like their second career, right? They were technologists in other contexts and now they're doing it for their mission. There are young folks who've never worked in a traditional space before and now are building out tech nonprofits. It's an exciting mix.
Yeah, yeah. What about your own corporate culture at Fast Forward? Anything special about it or anything that you're particularly proud of?
At Fast Forward, we're really building a community. And what I'm proud about of our culture is that each one of our teammates are really committed to the community.
Mm.
So folks come in with deep talents and are doing this because they care about the impact. You know, most of our folks come from the tech space. They have not worked in nonprofits previously, and they come to Fast Forward because they see the potential of these founders. They see the potential for scale of the idea, and they understand, like, how to build tech products, and they just want to build tech for good all day long. So it's really fun.
Yeah.
We work inside of a surgeon's house in the Presidio in San Francisco, and I love that the space that houses us was a space that housed people that were really trying to fix things that were broken. And that's what it feels like when you're with our team.
Let me close with this, Shannon. You weren't even around 4 years ago. And look what has happened.
Yeah.
So what do you think the landscape of the nonprofit tech sector will be 4 years from now? And what vision do you have for fast forward over that time?
It is incredible how much has happened in the last few years.
Sure is.
And I'll tell you that both Kevin and I are impatient optimists. We want more Wikipedias, Khan Academies. We want our founders to be on billboards in Times Square. We want them serving not thousands, but millions and someday billions of people, because that's what this world deserves. So we will continue to do small experiments and build out products and programs. You know, we were in 4 years ago, we were going to run an accelerator. Now we have an accelerator. We have a conference. Mm. We have a volunteer board. Just last week, we launched a digital volunteering platform where anyone can volunteer with some tech nonprofits anytime, anywhere. It's very flexible. We want to solve this problem of getting the best tech applied to our biggest social problems, and we're not going to stop until we do.
Bet you won't. Well, Shannon Farley, the executive director of Fast Forward, thank you so much for being here today. There is a lot on your website. Tell us about it and what awaits visitors there.
Our website is ffwd.org. There you can find a complete directory of all of the world's tech nonprofits. You can find jobs at tech nonprofits, both paid and unpaid. You can find this new digital volunteering board. And you can also find an application for our new accelerator. So if you're a tech nonprofit or thinking about starting a tech nonprofit, please reach out. We have services for everyone in the sector.
Thanks, Shannon. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.